I may not have a license to kill, but liberalism dies a little every time I pull the trigger on it. This is a conservative's perspective. Hey everybody, James Bostic here with the Conservative's Perspective on the Mojo 5.0 Radio Network, mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, you should be, because it is the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio, mojo50.com. Well, what's up? I know, it's been a minute, hasn't it? Whatever you do, I hope you didn't pay the ransom, because I was able to kill a guard and escape. Nice to be back. Here's the deal. Here's what went down. And I hope you guys, by the way, have been doing well. I guess it must have been after Christmas, because it was a year-in-review show. So it was probably that week between Christmas and New Year's that I got started on it. And it was... I figured we were going to go into extra innings, so I thought it would be like about an hour and a half, 2 hour show minimum, because there had been so much that had happened, and I had it all lined up. And you know what? I got about halfway through. I got what I would have thought for that particular project was going to be about the halfway point, and I just quit, man. I just quit. This is the first time since then, so we'll say... good solid 8 weeks, maybe nine, I just didn't do anything. I didn't even sit over here at this desk in front of this microphone. Zero. Nada. I slept on Sundays when I would ordinarily be doing the show, or at weeknights when I would be doing prep work. Wasn't doing either one. I was laying in bed. I was listening to old-time radio programs. I was still paying attention to the news and what was going on. I knew at some point I would jump back in this thing. I didn't realize it was going to be like 9-10 weeks later. But we're back. And I ate, and we had some snow days here in the Mountain State the week after our Christmas vacation, when we were supposed to return to start the second semester, second half of the school year. It snowed. And it was cold, and I mean cold, blue cold, single and negative digits, that's that kind of cold. And so we had an extra week, because the roads were impassable, not the main roads, mind you, they were still treacherous, but the secondary roads, and that's where so many of our kids live. And so we had an extra week to Christmas vacation, and I dug that. And this week we went to school, but the second week of February, the same thing happened again. And because of the freezing temperatures, and in between these two bad snowstorms, we had a series of devastating flash floods where it had warmed up so much and rained so much that the ground was saturated, creeks overflowed, towns, small cities throughout West Virginia got flooded. Not necessarily as bad as the devastation that we saw with the flooding in North Carolina, but still, pretty serious stuff. And then, like I said, you know, after the flood, we get a snowstorm, we're off for another week, and now we're back. Okay, we're back. It's March. And it's coming in like a lion here, because outside the temperature, I think, is about 29 degrees under sunny skies with a wind chill a little bit below real feel, what they call it now, below that. Anyway, look, I was off, man, and I dug it, and it was great, but it's time to get back to work. And man, I'm not exactly sure how long this show's going to be. I'm probably going to have to do another one in the middle of the week sometime to just bring us up to speed. But we'll pick up with what happened this weekend, because that's what's fresh in my mind right now. The slapdown, the can of whoop-ass that got opened on Vladimir Zelensky was just epic this week. Now, I know there are a lot of people who think it's a bad look. I was talking with my brother yesterday about it. And He didn't really think that was the right thing to do. That was the correct way to handle Zelensky and his lack of respect and the classlessness of the whole thing. You know, he runs around. He never wears a suit. He's in uniform, I guess, like Castro. You remember how Castro used to do that? And Idi Amin Dada did that, had a military, and Muammar Gaddafi. You know, he's like those guys, okay? He's a freaking-ass tin horn that we've sunk over $300 billion and who knows how much more into their country so that he can continue to lose this war in perpetuity. Hang on a minute. I'm getting a drink. Kool-Aid, man. Grape Kool-Aid especially. Grape and lime. Green Kool-Aid. Those are probably my two favorite Kool-Aids in the entire galaxy. What were we talking about? Oh, yeah. You know, so he runs around in these, you know, he looks, when I go to school, I'm working in the school system, I'm special ed department, and I work with some terrific kids, man. But I wear flexible clothing, okay? I've been doing this for 21 years, and for about 19 or 20.5 of them, my school day wardrobe consists of some really nice-looking pair of athletic trousers and a pullover of some kind. Sometimes it's a T-shirt. Sometimes it's a polo. Sometimes it's a long-sleeve tee or a Henley or a long-sleeve polo. You get the idea, all right? White socks or black socks and sneakers. Because we have some guys that'll just spring up and take off running. And at 62 years old, I don't really run a whole lot. I don't really even walk fast that much anymore. I'm kind of like Big Polly from Goodfellas. Yeah. Polly moves slow. But that was only because Polly didn't have to move for anybody if he didn't want that. And that's kind of about how I... But if I'm in front of them, I'm quick enough to take a shutter step there and move in and intercept them. But that's the nature of the beast. Now, we saw what all the other fellas were wearing in the White House. We saw what all the ladies were wearing in the White House. And it was coat and tie. It was business. Business. Arafat, that's another one of those stooges that wore a military uniform all the time. Weirdos. So, I'm just trying to formulate. I just got finished watching it again. I'm going to play the audio clip for you. It's about 5 or 6 minutes. What I saw, aside from an arrogant little pissant dictator, jack wagon, what I saw was a fella who thought because things had been as they were in dealing with the Biden administration, which meant, you know, you're going to get everything. He thought that was going to continue. And he thought he was going to be getting the same thing from Trump. And the people who were influencing him, the people who are advising him, and from what I've read, and you can go to Conservative Treehouse and check it out with Sundance there, there are elements in and indirectly associated with the intelligence community that are working that angle. They would like to see, ultimately, American military forces in some kind of demilitarized area acting as the firewall between Russia and Ukraine. And once they get the United States with boots on the ground in a situation like that, there will be an incident. There will be an intentional type of incident where American troops will be harmed. They'll be killed, wounded. Something's going to happen. And even if they aren't seriously harmed, that will be enough to try and generate momentum for an active United States military involvement in this. And then it goes from being a war between Russia and Ukraine to a war between Russia and the United States. Donald Trump doesn't want that. You don't want that. I don't want that either. But there are people out there in this world, and I've said many times that this world is replete with evil people, and the United States of America is no exception to this statement. You know we've got them here, and you know a lot of who they are. You know who a lot of them are. Good golly. So, those are the people that have been advising Zelensky. Those are the people of the previous administration who were perfectly happy giving this guy practically carte blanche with this money. $300 billion. Hold on, I'm going to check that out. I'm going to see just exactly what that number is. Sit tight. Okay, the consensus figure I'm seeing here is right around $175 billion. The United States has spent in funding. And we're not just funding the war. We're funding pensions for their retirees. Our retirement is going to those guys. And he says he doesn't, and Zelensky says he's not sure where half of it even went. But I'm sure there are numbers that he is aware of, and he does know where they went, because I think they went to him. That's how these guys always work. This whole thing has just been a tremendous boondoggle. The United States State Department, fundamentally, as you've seen, is responsible for who gets what and how much in foreign aid. So, how that works, and Republicans are in on this too, okay? It's not just Democrats. Republicans are in on this scam too. They have to be. So, what they do is the Houses of Representation, Congress, will vote on how much foreign aid to assign to what country. And right now, the big hot one is Ukraine. So in order to get these senators, Democrat and Republican, to vote on this, they're bribed. The money goes, the Congress and Senate, they vote to appropriate this money to Ukraine. X billions of dollars to Ukraine. They get the money. In return for getting this money, Ukraine then kicks back through various donors money to pay off the senators that voted for him, that voted for the bill to appropriate the money. You see what I mean? Now, and we're just looking at the Ukraine situation, all right? There have been... I think Congress has voted on five different bills, all of them under Biden, to appropriate foreign aid money to Ukraine. Billions. And I'm sure that this $175 billion is probably a low ballpark. I'd say it's probably closer to what the president said. And... So, let me collate my thoughts here. Hold on. So, under the Biden administration, the Senate, the Congress, understood that those who voted to appropriate this money for Ukraine would see a dividend from it. They would see a benefit from it in bribes and campaign. It was a giant washing machine, a money laundering scheme. And again, as Democrats and Republicans were in on this thing, it had to be that way because you're not going to pass it without bipartisan support. And all during the Biden administration, this is how it worked. Now, there were a lot of other places that they've done this in. Just think of any place where it's looked like a losing proposition. I mean, after 2 or 3 years and 4 years, we realize, man, this is nothing's changing. We've sunk a boatload of money into these people, and all we're doing is barely breaking even. So, homie comes over. He's got on his sweats. I didn't even know. Was he wearing? I couldn't tell. I'll have to check and see. I don't even. He might have been wearing sneakers too. He might have been looking like me. But he comes in, and I've got the clip set up, so I'm going to go ahead and play it for you. And again, it's like 5 or 6 minutes, but it's worth it. Now, the entire meeting itself, and here was the deal on the meeting. We're going to recoup some of that money. We're going to get that money back. And the deal was going to be concerning rare earth minerals. Now, we're rich in them, but so is Ukraine. And we already have ours, so let's get theirs as repayment for all the cash we've dumped into them. And so they set up this deal. Now, in the deal, we're gonna harvest these rare earth minerals. And in exchange, Russia's going to be a little more reluctant to attack areas where American people are engaged in this endeavor, in securing and acquiring the rare earth minerals. And that's right, because he doesn't want to go to war with the United States. The United States doesn't want to go to war with Russia. So he comes into the meeting, and he thinks he can get more. He thinks he can go beyond the agreement in terms of the security guarantees that he was looking for and demand and get President Trump to commit to more troops on the ground in Ukraine. That's not what Donald Trump wants. That's not what you want. That's not what I want. And that's not going to happen. So here's the following, like I said, this is the interchange where everything went south for Vladimir Luzinski. Vladimir. It's not Vladimir. It's with an O. Vladimir Zelensky, where he made the realization that he had screwed around and was in the process of finding out. Take a listen.
He broken this ceasefire. He killed our people and he didn't exchange prisoners. We signed the exchange of prisoners, but he didn't do it. What kind of diplomacy, JD, you are speaking about? What do you mean?
I'm talking about the kind of diplomacy that's going to end the destruction of your country.
Yes, but if you
Mr. President, with respect, I think it's disrespectful for you to come into the Oval Office and try to litigate this in front of the American media. Right now, you guys are going around and forcing conscripts to the front lines because you have manpower problems. You should be thanking the president for trying to bring an end to this conflict.
Have you ever been to Ukraine that you say what problems we have?
I have been to...
Come once.
I've actually watched and seen the stories, and I know what happens is you bring them on a propaganda tour, Mr. President. Do you disagree that you've had problems? bringing people into your military? And do you think that it's respectful to come to the Oval Office of the United States of America and attack the administration that is trying to prevent the destruction of your country?
A lot of questions. Let's start from the beginning.
Sure.
First of all, during the war, everybody has problems. Even you, but you have nice ocean and don't feel now, but you will feel it in the future.
You don't know that.
God bless. You will not have a war.
Don't tell us what we're going to feel. We're trying to solve a problem. Don't tell us what we're going to feel.
I'm not telling you.
Because you're in no position to dictate that. Remember this. You're in no position to dictate what we're going to feel. We're going to feel very good.
You will feel influenced.
We're going to feel very good and very strong.
You will feel influenced.
You're right now not in a very good position. You've allowed yourself to be in a very bad position, and it happens to be right about it.
From the very beginning of the war,
you're not in a good position. You don't have the cards right now. With us, you start having cards.
Playing cards.
Right now, you don't. Yeah, you're playing cards. You're playing cards. You're gambling with the lives of millions of people. You're gambling with World War III. You're gambling with World War III. And what you're doing is very disrespectful to the country, this country. That's back to you. Far more than a lot of people said they should have.
Have you said thank you once? Have you said thank you today? You went to Pennsylvania and campaigned for the opposition in October. Oh. Offer some words of appreciation for the United States of America and the president who's trying to save your country.
Please, you think that if you will speak very loudly about the war, you
He's
can...
He's not speaking loudly. He's not speaking loudly. Your country is in big trouble.
Can I answer?
Wait a minute. No, no. You've done a lot of talking. Your country is in big trouble.
I know.
You're not winning.
I know.
You're not winning this. You have a damn good chance of coming out okay because of us.
Mr. President, we are staying in our country, staying strong from the very beginning of the war. We've been alone, and we are thankful. I said thanks
in
this cabinet.
You haven't been alone.
In this cabinet.
We gave you, through this stupid president, $350 billion.
You voted for your
president. We gave you military equipment, and your men are brave, but they had to use our military.
What about West?
If you didn't have our military equipment, if you didn't have our military equipment, this war would have been over in 2 weeks.
In three days. I heard it from Putin. In 3 days. This is something
maybe
new.
Less.
In 2 weeks. Of course, yes.
It's going to be a very hard thing to do business like this.
Again,
I tell you.
Say thank you.
Except
that there are disagreements, and let's go litigate those disagreements rather than trying to fight it out in the American media when you're wrong. We know that you're wrong.
But you see, I think it's good for the American people to see what's going on.
I understand, sir.
I think it's very important. That's why I kept this going so long. You have to be thankful. You don't have the cards.
I'm thankful.
You're buried there. Your people are dying.
I can tell you
you're
again,
running low
I know.
On soldiers.
Don't,
listen,
don't, please,
you're running
Mr.
low
President.
On soldiers. It would be a damn good
Mr.
thing.
And
then you tell us, I don't want a ceasefire. I don't want a ceasefire. I want to go, and I want this. Look. If you could get a ceasefire right now, I tell you, you'd take it so the bullets stop flying and your men stop getting killed.
Of course we want to stop the war.
But you're saying you don't want a ceasefire.
But I said to you,
I want a ceasefire.
With guarantees.
Because you'll get a ceasefire faster than an agreement.
Ask our people about ceasefire, what they think.
That wasn't
it
with me.
For you what,
that
what
wasn't with me.
Means.
It that was with a guy named Biden, who was not a smart person. That was with Obama.
It was your president.
Excuse me. That was with Obama, who gave you sheets, and I gave you javelins.
Yes.
I gave you the javelins to take out all those tanks. Obama gave you sheets. In fact, the statement is Obama gave sheets and Trump gave javelins. You got to be more thankful, because let me tell you, you don't have the cards. With us, you have the cards. But without us, you don't have any cards.
One more question to Mr. Vice President. I'm sorry, here.
It's going to be a tough deal to make. Because the attitudes have to change.
What if Russia breaks ceasefire? What if Russia breaks peace talks? What do you do then? I understand that it's a heated conversation right now.
What are you saying?
She's asking, what if Russia breaks the ceasefire?
What if anything? What if a bomb drops on your head right now?
But they have
okay? What if they broke it? I don't know. They broke it with Biden because Biden, they didn't respect him. They didn't respect Obama. They respect me.
And of course, the left losing their minds over this entire thing. And, you know, he's a bully. Shame on him for picking on little Zelensky. He's a Putin stooge. He's all these different things, and it's just the same old. It's the same old crap. It's the same old circle jerk, man. And America has no business putting guys on the ground in Ukraine. They just don't. We just don't. We don't have any business doing that. It does not serve any interest beyond the money laundering class, the corrupt DC politicians that signed off on these minimum $175 billion to Ukraine, because they get their piece of the action out of that. That's how that works. And that's not just Democrats. That's Democrats and Republicans right there. So, you have a guy, Donald Trump, who I have said on more than once is probably the most gifted natural psychologist of the 21st century. And the reason I say that is he has spent a lifetime making deals with hard cases in New York. Okay, the unions, the contractors, the suppliers, he has to deal with all those guys. And the real estate purchases that he's done. He knows what makes his negotiating opponent, the people he's negotiating with, who he's dealing with. He knows intuitively somehow what makes them tick. He took a look at what was going on, and I think in the clip, I think he made mention of the fact that he was glad to see this played out, that the American people can see truly what's going on. And what we got is a little guy who had become entitled to unlimited money from the United States, and he thought that was going to be the same deal under Donald Trump that it was under Joe Biden, and he found out that that's not the case. What happens next? I don't know. There's no way, I think, that anyone in Europe, the European Union and its various and sundry members, can supply the UK and allow them to live in the style to which they have become accustomed under the Biden handout system. Well, they're not going to see that with Trump. They're going to have to pony up something, because you don't get something for nothing. And there's a lot of ways that this could turn out. Ultimately, I think what's going to happen, after the meeting yesterday, and here's why I say what I'm going to say. So let me say this about that. On the flight he leaves, the press, well, it wasn't a press, I guess it was, yeah, there was a reporter there asking questions. Anyway, after this thing de-escalates, Zelensky and his people are escorted to an anteroom while the president confers with his associates. Not uncommon. That's how it works. That gives Zelensky a chance to talk to his guys and see what we can do to save this, if anything, and you know, there wasn't. And it gives Donald Trump a chance to talk with his people. And the conclusion was very obvious. You got a guy, and it was said in his statement. It was said in the statement that Donald Trump made in the aftermath of this. We had a very meaningful meeting in the White House today. Much was learned that could never be understood without conversation under such fire and pressure. It's amazing what comes out through emotion, and I have determined that President Zelensky is not ready for peace if America is involved, because he feels our involvement gives him a big advantage in negotiations. He further, he, he goes on to say, I don't want advantage, I want peace. He disrespected the United States of America in its cherished Oval Office. He can come back when he's ready for peace. And I think that's what will happen. Now, on the way out, so I think it was Mike Waltz, went in and told him, you know, we've done all the negotiating we can today, and we're not going to go any further. So it's time for you to leave. And so they boot him out. So he goes back to Europe. He goes to England. He goes to London when he's talking with President Keir Starmer. And what he does is he puts out a tweet. I guess on the way over, he had time to think about what he had done and how stupid he'd been, and decided to thank the American people, to thank Donald Trump, to thank J.D. Vance, to thank us all for everything we've done. He loves us and wouldn't be anywhere without us, which goes to show that he realized on the trip back, he realized, but it's too little too late. What'll happen is at some point, and this is my prediction, some point in the next few days, they're going to try and walk all this back. They're going to try and get things kickstarted again. But what's going to happen, I think, in this case, if he really wants those things, none of it's going to happen until there is a signature on this rare earth minerals deal. I don't think he's going to be able to even ask for anything until there's a signature on this deal. And then they'll start, and the terms will be dictated by President Trump. And, you know, he's really not going to have a whole lot of choice to go along with it, no matter how he's being counseled. There were people who were advising him, and I'm sure there were some Americans in on this, like Victoria Nuland and other State Department, also RANs, and people in the intelligence community, or former members of the intelligence community, trying to get him, you know, to bend Donald Trump to his will. And hey, that's just not, you can forget about it. This is not going to happen. It's not going to happen. But I got a feeling Vladimir Zelensky, if he wishes to stay in power, and it may be that he can no longer stay in power. Now, it may be that, you know, we don't talk anymore to Ukraine's leadership until the leadership in Ukraine has been changed. Oh, yeah. So we'll see what happens with that. A lot of people, myself personally, I felt really good to see an American president standing up for the United States and not kowtowing to some little tin horn. And that's all this guy is, okay? Again, he wears a uniform all the time, or PT clothes, whatever, you know. He's no different than Gaddafi. He's no different than Arafat. He's no different than Castro. He's no different than Idi Amin. He's no different than Muammar or Gaddafi. All those guys, they same thing. Same thing. They all did the same thing. But now these people, these self-insistent people, who think that the United States is just some massive teat for them to suckle at, forever and ever, I think they're, you know, it's difficult for them to believe that those days are over, but those days are over. And again, Zelensky, listening to stupid people and taking his counsel from fools, screwed around and found out. Not good. Not good at all. But that's how they work it. That's how they work it. So we'll see what happens. I think what will happen is at some point, Zelensky will come back hat in hand, and it'll be a different press conference than what we saw. Moving on. Man, I can't believe it's been this long since I have done this. A lot of things have happened. You know, I don't know if we told you or not, or I might have mentioned last time, we were doing stuff on Blog Talk, and we had done stuff on Blog Talk for like 12 years. Long, long time. But Blog Talk went out of business January 31st, and so I've been doing the show, and had been for a while, doing the show, and you can find it at rss.com or a couple of other platforms that it automatically goes to. Amazon Music, Spotify, a couple others. I can't remember who they are. But anyway, that's what's going on there. And what I have seen, you know, like I said, I haven't been doing a show, but I have been paying attention to things ever since the election, and I was going to say it was a flurry of activity from the time that Donald Trump returned to the Oval Office with the executive orders that he's been handing out to fix everything, and of course the Doge and it. Steve Bannon called the strategy flooding the zone. And what does that mean? Well, that means that you generate this avalanche, not a flurry, but an avalanche of activity, executive orders, statements, directives. You know, the people he's got in place in the cabinet positions, with the possible exception of the Department of Justice, which I'm just not exactly sure about Pam Bondi, and we'll get into that another time. But there's so many things happening. And, you know, he's flooding the zone. And by that, all this stuff that he's doing, the 100-plus executive orders, the directives from his cabinet members to the various cabinet Hold on. I gotta pause this a second. Excuse me. A little bronchitis last week, and I'm still not quite over it. You know, he's given these directives to his cabinet posts, his cabinet members, and they're going out and taking care of business. You see what Hegseth's doing at the Department of Defense. We see what's going on with Doge. And there's not everything that's being done requires, and I'm not exactly sure why the Democrats think they do, but they do, requires a response. Every executive order, they got something they got to say about it. Every directive that comes from the various cabinet posts to their territories and their employees has something that has to be said about that. And there's just not enough time. There's just not enough time. They don't have enough time to respond. By the time they're finished responding about the changes to Title IX, saying that males can't participate in female athletics, to what the Doge people are doing, to what Hegseth's doing with DIE. It may as well be DIE after what we saw with the FAA. But they just can't respond in time. They don't have enough time to respond, because by the time they're responding to those things, the president's already, and because the president leads this news cycle, the president, you know, has moved on to something else. And the news people are following that. And, you know, then they turn around and they want to ask Democrats for their response. Well, the Democrats still haven't finished responding to what happened 2 days ago. Flooding the zone. And I think, again, you know, this president, Donald Trump, has some remarkably intuitive gifts when it comes to reading other people. He's been negotiating all his life, like I said earlier. I said that during his first term, and I think it's no different today. The guy knows how to read people. He knows what motivates them, I think. He just knows what makes them tick, and he's really good at it. And we see it all the time. Now, are his instincts totally unerring? Not always, but, you know, he leads the league in this kind of thing. And I don't believe, and I have never believed, nor do I ever think it's nor did I ever think it was conceivable that the Trump Russia thing, okay, it's always been a joke to me. It still is, but they're going to trot that out because what it appears is. And I don't know how I really don't understand how they say it is, but the left says by doing these things that he's done, and by shutting down Zelensky when he was running his mouth yesterday and booting him out of the White House, and rightfully so, that somehow this is further proof that Donald Trump is in league with Vladimir Putin. He's not in league with Vladimir Putin any more than he was in league with Kim Jong-un, any more than he's in league with anybody. He's going to work with whoever he has to, the realities of this situation being what they are. Do I like Vladimir Putin? No. He's an ex-KGB guy. He's commie all the way. There's no other way to get around that. Yeah, he profits from the oligarchs. But he still wants to see those glory days from the Cold War, before Glasnost, before Perestroika. Before they were losing in Afghanistan. And that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. Any more than Ukraine thinking they can defeat Russia is going to happen. They're losing. And the only way they're staying afloat, the only way they're staying afloat in this endeavor is through United States assistance. Now, the European Union, yes, they have spent some money there too. They're going to get theirs back. They've got deals worked out to where they get theirs back. We didn't have that. And you heard the president. I think the president mentioned that in that segment of the clip that we played there earlier. We're going to get it back. That's the whole point behind the rare earth minerals deal. Not dead air, man. I'm just thinking about the whole thing. And there are a lot of people who were put off. Again, talking with my brother yesterday, he thought it was a bad look. He made faces when I asked him about it, and I disagree. And like I said, there was some point I think in that clip when Donald Trump said, "You know, I've let this go on," and he did because he could have shut it down anytime he wanted to and run those people out of there. He said, "I've let this go on as long as I have." So the American people can see what we're dealing with. And he's absolutely right. The guy came in disrespecting. Okay? He's always had that attitude. And the Biden people allowed that. And the Democrats, who kiss his butt and tell him he's the greatest thing since, I don't know, Tito, Kochescu, you know, DM. And they love him, and they shower him with these plaudettes, and they as a matter of fact, he met with some of those guys. He met with a bunch of Democrats before he took his meeting with the president. And within that meeting with the Democrats, Chris Murphy, one of them, he says, you know, we're only going to sign this rare earth minerals deal if we see some very serious and reliable security guarantees concerning America and what he was looking for, in other words, troops in the country. He wanted American boots on the ground, as they say. He wanted American people in there in country to help fight the Russians. Well, what? No, come on. No. But that's what he was. That's what he was hanging on, and it didn't happen because he thought he was still dealing again. He thought he was dealing with Biden people. He thought Donald Trump was all talk. And he thought he could go in there and throw his weight around like he had done with the Biden people and the Democrats who gave him passes, who allowed this to happen, who gave him, you know, they fostered this sense of self-insistence, of entitlement in this dude. And he thought he could go in there and do it. And Donald Trump said no. No, J.D. Vance said no. You ungrateful little bastard. And I don't know why that didn't come out. I don't know why somebody didn't say that. Because that's exactly what he looked like to me. A petulant, sullen, ungrateful little bastard. Bastard. Sounds good to say. A deep-fried bastard with rich, creamy bastard filling. And that's what I've always thought of that guy. Not that I'm cheering for Russia, because there's been a lot of damage. Russia has sustained a lot of damage, but Russia has also, I think, acted with a certain level of restraint because they got like a gazillion guys. Okay? ask Germany. Ask Germany about that. All right? Millions of guys during the Second World War. Stalin was engaged in an existential fight with the German army, German Air Force. He had to move all his armaments factories to the east, far away from where the Germans were, because if he's going to have a chance at doing any of this, he had to have his munitions factories manufacturing munitions, because that's how that works. It ain't a war till the bullets show up. But anyway, during that time frame, when Russia has its boot on, or when Germany has its boot on Russia's neck, on the other side of the, I think of the Urals, in Vladivostok, close to the Pacific, on the Pacific, he had 30 divisions held in reserve, never used them, until it came time to declare war on Japan, when that suited his purpose. But 30 divisions, he just kept them over there. And they could have made the difference in a lot of places where the Russian military otherwise suffered. So, you know, yeah, has there been a certain level of restraint here? Yeah. And there's probably been some prudent thinking because Russia has suffered some losses in this war. Ukraine has suffered. I mean, there's been millions of people killed. Not just combatants. Old men, old women, little kids, women. Innocents. You know, and they're being slaughtered practically daily on both sides. And it's got to stop. Now, Ukraine doesn't have the wherewithal to do this. The European Union does not have the wherewithal or the influence to effect this. They do not. They don't have the ability to effect this to the point to where we see a ceasefire, where we see an end to this war. The United States, on the other hand, in the form of Donald Trump and his foreign policy and his effectiveness at diplomacy, we do have a pretty solid shot at bringing this off. And at some point, if there's any intellectual honesty about Vladimir Zelensky, he knows this. But again, having taken counsel of fools, he screwed around and he found out. Oh, that was something I wanted. Yeah, there was. Where did he say it? He's all dressed up. That was what it was. The first words spoken by Donald Trump to Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky as he arrived at the White House on Friday was apparently ribbing him for having come to a formal meeting in athleisure. Okay, I didn't know that was a term. I guess that's what I'm doing. Anyway, President Donald Trump met Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky at the West Wing lobby, at the West Wing porch, on Friday morning for talks and reportedly the signing of the critical minerals deal. The meeting of the foreign leaders has itself become part of President Trump's politicking, with Britain's Prime Minister Keir Starmer warmly welcomed on the step on Thursday, but France's Emmanuel Macron snubbed by not being met at all earlier in the week. Well, Zelensky got a personal greeting, and he also got a jibe. As the Ukrainian leader stepped out of his motorcade vehicle, President Trump looked surprised and immediately pointed at Zelensky's torso. As the two men exchanged greetings and shook hands, Trump's eyeline and body language made it clear to the waiting news cameras that he was talking to Zelensky about his dress, a button-up sweatshirt emblazoned with the device of the government of Ukraine and plain trousers. A video posted by staffer Margo Martin, White House staffer Margo Martin, shows President Trump saying, "Well, look, you're all dressed up." "He's all dressed up today," Trump declared to the press. While most, probably too reserved to say anything about it, Zelensky switched from regular global business attire to a combination of semi-military fatigues and olive green athleisure in wartime. No matter the location, formality, or context, does subvert norms in political dress. Of course, exceptions are made in wartime. In Great Britain during the Second World War, for example, clothing was rationed. Prime Minister Winston Churchill took to wearing a onesie. You know what I'm talking about? A jumpsuit. All right? He took to wearing a onesie because he found it practical during air raids. But context, according to this article at Breitbart, is key. Even with that 1940s forerunner to modern zero-effort dress to hand, Churchill still tailored his appearance to his audience, wearing military uniforms because he was First Lord of the Admiralty, or even yacht club stuff, as he was entitled to wear when visiting the troops, or he would wear a business suit when meeting with President Franklin Delano Roosevelt at the White House. So, and it isn't like they blew up all the suits in Ukraine. All the suits were destroyed in bombing raids. Okay, so they do this, and it's theater. And I talk about American politics being theater. It's politics around the world is theater. Okay, it was theater when Castro did it. It was theater when Muammar Gaddafi did it. It was theater with Idi Amin Dada. It was theater with Joseph Tito. It was theater with Arafat, all those guys. Think about all those guys. Augusto Pinochet, all these dictators, all these tyrants, they always wear the military uniforms. It's theater. It's to project a presence of strength, of independence, I suppose, in a way. But this guy's a joke. And he's now being treated as a joke. He doesn't know what to think about that. And again, what I'm saying is I think when all this is said and done, he will return to negotiate this deal with the United States, with President Trump, with the United States State Department and Marco Rubio. And that's going to be that. I'm not exactly sure when it'll happen. They'll play this thing down, and maybe in a week or two, and there might be a little bit more posturing, where Zelensky tries to soften what he said or tries to walk it back a little bit, and maybe there'll be intermediaries that help fix this relationship. It's hard to say who's going to be the peacemaker here. I don't think there can be one. I think that the EU representatives would like to try to do this. Starmer, Macron, the chick down in Italy. I don't think she really cares one way or another. They haven't seen a whole lot about her. And I don't know that they really take her seriously. It's hard to say. But the principle's there. They would like to see this get concluded one way or another. Now, they would be happy with just forever war and forever American money and American intervention. Well, that's not going to happen. Those days are over. So in a couple of weeks, after some massaging of this and realigning of talking points and making sure everybody knew that it was just a misunderstanding. These things were taken out of context, and everybody got excited. And, of course, I'm grateful, and, of course, America's done wonderful things. And then, you know, and Trump will listen, and Trump will, once he's determined that Zelensky's ready to look for peace and that he's prepared and shows his bona fides by signing off on this rare earth mineral deal, Then we'll see some progress. But it's not going to be until then, because I don't think we're not going to give him any more money. I don't think we're going to give him any more tanks or anything like that. And that's going to put a hurting on the European Union, because they can't supply Ukraine with not only the amount of equipment, but the quality of equipment that the United States produces for our own armed forces. Oh, well, you know what? I think I'm about talked out for right now. I'm probably going to do another show later this week and post it up here. And so probably check back about Tuesday or Wednesday, and we'll see what's going on with another program here. I still want to do a year in review, which I had a pretty good idea on that, and we're going to look at it. And I think what I'm just going to do is hit the key points. I know it's March. I get it. But still. It's like I can only go so far forward until I do that, and that's just my own ADHD TV, so, or my own obsessive, compulsive, gotta-do-it disorder. But anyway, it's good to be back, I'll tell you that. I had a great time off, and that's the longest period of time I've gone without broadcasting in 12 years. I might take a weekend off here and there when I was doing Civil War reenactments, or I just needed a vacation, or I was sick. But this has been the longest period in 12 years that I've taken and not broadcasted. And it's really nice to be back. It was great to be off. I didn't feel bad about it, but I knew it was time to go back to work. And so here we are. And we'll be here. The usual post day will be Sundays. But then again, there may be one day during the week when I have some time and I'll sit down and talk it all out. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here and share this stuff with you. It's good to be back. I've missed you guys. And looking forward to talking to you more and more, taking a look at things as we do through a conservative perspective. In the meantime, God bless you. God bless America. We'll see you next time.